So Sam is, I was like, what the fuck are we doing today? Hello and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, the media podcast where normally we would make some sort of self-referential joke here, but we're tapped out, guys. I don't know. I am Nicole Sweeney.
My name is Marines.
And joining us again is
Sam from the YouTube channel Thoughts on Tomes.
Hello. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
Sam is joining us again to talk about anti-heroes, which I have never talked to you about. But Mari says that this is something that you have a lot of thoughts and feelings on.
I do. I think what Mari means is that we fight about it a lot, I think is what she meant.
Cool. Yeah. That was like kind of the sense that I got about it. This is a thing that I think Mari and I have a lot of very similar feelings on. So
My
sense was that you were going to come and bring like a different set of feelings, which is good.
Okay. I'll just lean into that.
Yes, yeah. Lean into like your most combative instinct. This is going to be great content.
Sam and I are usually pretty good about like knowing where it's, you know, we can like share our differing opinions, but there's a point where we're like, you know what? We want to stay friends. That's where we're going to leave it. So this should be fun.
Yeah. That's fair. So I guess I should back up. We like introduce the topic. Normally this is like synopsis time, but in the case of these tropey conversations, that's a little bit more complicated. Since we don't have any sort of synopsis, like plot synopsis, I am going to introduce this in the most professional, legit way possible and read directly from the Wikipedia entry for anti-heroes. So according to Wikipedia, an anti-hero or anti-heroine is a protagonist in a story who lacks conventional heroic qualities and attributes such as idealism, courage, and morality. Although anti-heroes may sometimes do the right thing, it is not always for the right reasons, often acting primarily out of self-interest or in ways that defy conventional ethical codes. I like that it's like definitionally someone who lacks morality. Cool. Great. I think that is a good place to start, in part because that is like the crux of my issue with most anti-hero stories. Not all. I think there are a number of notable exceptions. But I think that part of where I struggle with anti-hero-centric stories is particularly in fanish spaces. So I think there is something to be said for a story just on its own. But obviously, we are people who spend a lot of time like dissecting stories and like really picking them apart. And it is in those kinds of spaces that I start to have a lot of issues with anti-hero stories. And I think that my issue can be like best summed up with the Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like if you've never seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you've probably seen the gif of Andy Samberg's character saying, "Cool motive, still murder." Right. Like, like that. It's like that idea that complexity, that like a complex and layered and nuanced human being somehow can only be encapsulated by like a completely immoral human being. Like it's that thing that I'm just like, I'm over it. I think probably I would have found this idea more interesting if I were coming to these kinds of conversations a decade or two sooner than I did. But like by now it's this thing that I'm like, yeah, I'm done. I am over the idea that in order to be a complicated human being, you also have to be a bad human being. So those are my fighting words.
Right. Well, that's the funny thing is that I tend to agree with you as well on a lot of that. And just like the fandom space is kind of ruining anti-heroes in a lot of ways. Because there's a lot of like apology for anti-heroes anti-heroes and anti-villains, and I don't like that either. I'm like, no, let them be bad. Like, I like them because they're bad, you know? Like, don't be like, oh, but it's because their dad beat them. Like, I mean, like, there's all these, like, again, like you said, like, apologies for stuff, and it's like, no, you can still be like, hey, they do these bad things, and that's bad, and we can talk about it. And I think a lot of people kind of shy away from that, but I also kind of hear you referencing the kind of, like, oversaturation of the anti-hero,
right,
which is something that I was thinking about when preparing for this, is I was kind of like, okay, who are my favorite anti-heroes? And I was like, basically every character I like sort of falls in the anti-hero, which kind of means that there's like, everyone is in like the middle of this spectrum now, instead of there really being like, oh, that's an anti-hero, and like, that's the hero. You know, like, I feel like we don't have those extremes anymore. Like, everyone's falling in the middle. So it's a lot harder to kind of be like, here's the, like, the classic archetype of either the hero and the anti-hero, I feel like, right, aren't as prevalent in modern media as they used to be.
I agree with that. I think probably my big two issues with this trope, and so it's not that I never like it, it's that when I come to a story that has an anti-hero, I'm going to feel more negative, like I'm coming with my negative baggage, basically, yes, to that story, that I'm like, ah, like I'm already thinking that it's probably not going to be for me just because of the experiences that I've had. So I think a part of that is 100% oversaturation. And I think, Nicole, you kind of mentioned the timing of it as well, like that we are adults in this day and age, because with everything that's going on, like IRL, you know, like all of these things with like the Me Too movement.
Whatever
and just,
could you mean?
But all of these things that are coming out with the Me Too movement, and just in general, this idea that really sucky people, a lot of the times men, because you see more anti-heroes than anti-heroines, get either rewarded or excused for their behavior. That's something that's happening like out there in real life. Like, I don't necessarily want to read about it. I don't want to read about like more bad people being rewarded or excused for their behavior. So that's like one thing where I'm just like, it's not the time. I'm a little oversaturated. And the other thing is just that I think that a lot of times people confuse two things here. And so you can have an anti-hero that you really like within the confines of the story, and you like what they do for the story, and you like them as a complex character, but it kind of leans into what Sam was saying about how then people take it to a place where you are forgiving or defending that character, yeah, and you're, yes, a fan, like you're being a fan of that character and his behavior instead of being a fan of what that character does for the story and what it brings to the narrative, if that makes sense. So it's like that weird like blurring of the line where all of a sudden it's not like, wow, what a bad, like what a great anti-hero. It was super complex. It's like, I love him. Like, yay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, kill everyone. It's fine. And it's like that reaction to it that always just gives me the icky feeling. So
totally. And I think that there it is important to distinguish between the like show, book, whatever media perspective and kind of fan perspectives. And I think this is a distinction that I'm not usually eager to draw because I think that that is inherently complicated and whatever. But to that question, my level of enjoyment is often going to be heavily wrapped up in whether I feel like the source material is actively grappling with the ways in which our anti-hero's behavior is not great. I think one of the examples, I was talking to some friends about this last night, and one of the examples that got thrown out was like Jessica Jones. And like all of the ways that Jessica is shitty are ways that the show directly confronts over, and like it's about it in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and it's not ever trying to say, oh, it's not that bad, right? Like it's like actually grappling with it. I think Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is another example of this, that like Rebecca's does a lot of really shitty, bad things. And the show is like constantly exploring that fact. It's honest about the ways in which she is doing shitty, bad things. And I think that for me is like a big, like, to what degree are you trying to tell me to like not look at it versus like, no, this is bad, but like also this other thing that they did is good. And, you know, take, do with that information what you will versus like, No, buddy's so tortured.
Look at this backstory.
Yes.
Yeah, that definitely got me thinking about kind of the relationship, like you're saying, between the canon and like show writers and stuff and between like fandom. Because when you're talking about that and the show either confronting or not, we're just talking about shows in this case, but any sure. media, confronting or not confronting something, I find that when the show isn't confronting it is when the fandom does. So that's kind of an interesting, or like you have this pocket of the fandom that does. So for example, I feel like in a lot of ways with a lot of like the vampire media, for example, because this I feel like is a huge thing that comes up, but with like Damon Salvatore from the Vampire Diaries or like Spike from Buffy, I feel like the show and the main fandom that isn't in the fandom, but like the people that just watched the show, they didn't confront those characters and what they did. And the show kind of apologized for a lot of those characters' behavior, blah, blah, blah. But any conversation I've had with fans, like people that have been really into it and analyze it and everything else, I find that fans of those characters in fandom are more likely to be like, no, that was really bad. Like that thing they did, that was horrible. And I feel like, so depending on how the show handles it is kind of, I feel like the fandom does the flip side of it, which is an interesting, or at least in my experience of things, just when I'm trying to like think of them on the fly like this, it's interesting how they are kind of polar opposites in that way and kind of how they are addressing these things typically.
I think we saw a little bit of this when we were recapping Buffy on the website. And I think what happens is that what we saw, and I think this is probably coloring a lot of where Nicole and I are coming from, especially in talking about how you experience a character when you're experiencing it within fandom. So what we saw was that a lot of people who are very passionate about these characters come in and fill in the plot holes for the show. And mm-hmm. they do a lot of their own, they have their own headcanon. They do a lot of their own heavy lifting. Like they're doing much more than the show ever did in service of the character that they want to defend. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you get into that area, there was a lot of times where we were like, okay, great, that makes sense. But the show didn't say that. Like you are now filling this area in, which is perfectly fine. Like that right. is part of media, is that you can go and add your own spin, your own interpretation. You bring all of that to the story, but that is personal. So, you know, you see it that way and you bring all of that stuff to the table, but that's not what the show presented necessarily. So that's where we got into a lot of tricky territory when we were talking about not only Spike, but Wesley was a big one as well, because Wesley like did some really shitty things, but everybody was like, oh, but no, think about this. I'm like, no, stop. No, like, that's no, not no, what no. the, yeah, yeah.
He did shitty things. Yeah. Like, why are we having this whole extended conversation? Yes, totally.
I think another thing that is, like, super important to, like, kind of touch on when we're talking about this is how, obviously, it's super objective in the sense that, you know, we talk about this like broad term of like doing bad things, but like bad things, what does that mean? Like, what are you doing? Like the thing that I think is like a really bad thing might not be something that somebody else thinks is a really bad thing. And I think at the end of the day, the antiheroes that fail to grasp me in any way don't have, like, there's nothing for me to hold on to and not necessarily relate to, but care about something in that character. Like, I still think that there needs to be some kind of core that is relatable to the person watching, that you can be like, oh yeah, they lie a lot, but for me, it's like the anti-heroes that even though they might do bad things, they still have their own sense of a moral code. Yeah. Even if it's yes. a messed up one, like you're like, oh, that's kind of weird. That's kind of wild. But they have their own personal set of like guiding principles. And if I can see that, then I can hold on to that character rather than just somebody who's like, you know, F them all, kill everybody or whatever yeah. else they're doing.
Totally. That's The Americans is my kind of go-to example of that as well. Another like anti-hero media that I happen to fucking adore, but it is that. It's wrapped up in that idea that like, okay, you have some sort of like strongly held moral code at your center. And like, I can disagree with it. I can feel conflicted about whether or not I'm rooting for you and all of that. But like, also I get it. Like I and everything that I'm seeing about the world that you are inhabiting is driving home for me where you are coming from, even if I don't agree with that, the anti-hero's perspective on things.
For me, an example of that is, I feel like I mention this every time Sam is on, but it's Geralt from the Witcher series, but he's very much like that. He's one of my favorite anti-heroes, and part of the reason why is that he has this, he is almost the most, I don't know, his convictions are almost the strongest in the whole story, even though like his whole job is going out and killing things. And you realize that about him, and he doesn't take sides, and there's stuff about him that is definitely very morally gray, especially if you're applying like my modern sensibilities on this fantasy character, you know, like there's definitely things that I'm like, oh, that's kind of messed up, but he
all
has
the murder.
All the murder, namely. Yeah. But he has his, you know, guiding principles, which I love. And as soon as I was like, oh my gosh, he believes things deeply, I was a lost cause.
What's so great about that game in general? Because again, yeah, we have to touch on that game since, well, that world actually, but the games specifically, because that's what I tend to interact with the most. But there's so many anti-heroes in that game. I mean, there's so many, or anti-villains even. And there's characters in Witcher 3 specifically is what I'm referring to that are horrible, awful people, like people that like beat their wives and like bury their babies out in the middle of a field without a gravesite, like really horrible things. You're just like, you're a horrible person, but somehow the game makes you be like, oh, like I sort of have a weird soft spot for you, but you're a douche, you know, like, and it's, that just shows like just really good character building and character development and everything else. But it is one of those games that when I first started playing it, I was like, man, there's a lot of really bad people in here. But by the end, you're like, oh, the Bloody Baron, I have a soft spot for that guy. You know, like, why? But they're an awful person. So yeah, I definitely feel the same way about as far as like moral code thing. And that's why I think I specifically tend to like thief plot lines and thief characters more so than like assassins, for example, even though I do love assassins. But I find that assassins are way harder to give that like moral code to and totally to write properly without being like, either they're not an assassin at all and never killing anyone, or they're killing everyone with no regard for anything. And it's like very hard to meet in the middle. Thieves are much easier to do that with. And they're much easier to have like, oh, thieves run in bands, so they have this little like found family, and it combines all these other tropes that I really like. So I find that almost all of my favorite anti-heroes are thieves, specifically in books. But even though I also love assassins, I can't name a lot of them that I really love and that I feel do the anti-hero trope that well.
This is a thought that is not fully formed that I just had while hearing you describe this sort of thief assassin breakdown that, like, A, I agree with, I think just in general, because it is much easier to find a logical reason, like an acceptable reason that somebody is stealing from people than an acceptable reason that somebody is murdering people. It's just like a very obvious fact about the degree of those two crimes, right? But I think I mentioned last time we were talking about Atomic Blonde that spy stories, I think that is part of why I like spy stories, is because that is a spot where you can grapple with that, mm-hmm. because there are all sorts of ideas about like nationalism and like loyalty and all of that that become complicated and baked into this question of like murdering people in a way that I think that is a way that you can approach that. I don't know. We'll see if this is my once per podcast thing that I'm going to disagree with later. Putting that out there right now.
I think it's also interesting to take a look at the anti-hero in comparison to their story. So The Witcher is a very, like, that series is a very brutal world. Mm-hmm. It's like all, like, I mean, there's wars going on, there's monsters, it's a fantasy world. So there's like, you know, the reason that you kind of feel bad for these people is because that guy's a douche, but also there's like this monster after him. him and you're like, oh, you know, yeah, so right. Like the brutality of the world really speaks and informs a lot about how you're going to feel about your anti-hero. So in comparison, Geralt is like a shining star in that world. Whereas if you put him like maybe in a more contemporary setting, you'd be like, man, you're a murderer. Like and I think that again, thieves stories are usually the same too. They're usually very like hard knock stories, you know, people banding together for this common goal. And it's usually to rob from the rich, which, you know, poor people around the world can get behind that notion, I'm sure. Like, not that we would ever do it, but I'm going to read the story and enjoy it kind of thing. So right, I think it's very important to like consider what's the world, what is like the comparative morality of all of the other set dressing in the characters, and where does your character fall in all of that?
Yes, totally. I think that is definitely true of the Americans, where again, they're all a bunch of spies and stuff. And so there's a lot of people who are just out there killing people. So there's that. Game of Thrones obviously comes to mind when you talk about the brutality of the world and how that informs the way that you read various characters. I think of like the Hound.
Yes.
I think somebody who qualifies as an anti-hero, and that's definitely somebody who, it depends on where you situate him, you know, how you read that character is very, like, context is very, very important to how you read that character.
Game of Thrones is a really difficult one for me. Like, looking at either they're all anti-heroes or, like, I can't think of... My first reaction was the Hound and Arya, I think, are very clear anti-heroes. I don't know, like, I almost said Dany, but now that we're reading her, like, her chapters in the book, it's only the first book, but I feel like she's more positioned as a hero. I don't know. It's very, that whole world is so shades of gray that it's difficult for me to pinpoint who is doing exactly what.
Sure. Yeah, they definitely all fall into, I was thinking about that show before we signed on too, as far as a good example of anti-heroes, because they all kind of do fall into that anti-hero category. The only two characters that I feel like are still firmly in hero are Brienne of Tarth, because she's lawful good, and like Jon Snow, but even he's having his moments. But like everybody else is firmly either like a villain, an anti-villain, or an anti-hero. Like there's really no other, you know, truly heroic characters anymore in there. Not that they're ever really were, because again, I'm trying to think back and I'm like, basically every character has been an anti-hero. But again, like you guys said, it's because of the world, and you couldn't position them in a different type of world and still have a character like Jaime, for example, be so well loved by like so much of the fandom because of all the things that he has done.
We talked about this when we were talking about the book, and here's a Game of Thrones spoiler, so I mean, I guess. But we were talking about that when we were talking about the fact that Ned dies and just how it gets to us, but also Ned could not survive in that world. He was also a hero, like through and through, honor all the time kind of person, and he just was not cut out for that world. So like even though you feel his death, like there's that moment of like, yeah, like you did this to yourself. You were doing really, like you were
so
too
stupid.
Good. Yeah, dumb things were happening here. So
and his heroism, like the things that made him a pure hero and not an anti-hero, also endangered everyone he loved. So like, I don't know how heroic was all of that in the end.
Yeah, I mean, you have the same thing with like Robb Stark, again, spoiler alert from like 5 years ago, but like Robb Stark was your other like true, like pretty heroic, you know, I think they maybe did like one bad thing the whole time and he died a horrible death. So I feel like the show and the, you know, series in general, the world sets it up for like heroes do not survive here. Like you cannot be just your standard hero and survive. This is not what this world is built on. This is not what the morals of this world and the politics of this world are built on. You're not going to make it. You have to be shady in some fashion.
I also think this, again, with Ned and again with Robb, that part of what the show is doing isn't just saying like, oh, you can't survive in this world, but like it is asking questions about what all of that actually means. Like to me, the fact that like Ned's goodness, like it's not just that Ned was so good and he couldn't have survived in that world. It's also like I keep coming back to this question of like, what the fuck was that goodness for? And I think that that is something that like that universe is actively trying to interrogate. Like, was it good? Like was his commitment to his honor actually a good thing? And I think that on the one hand, you can say that yes, it makes him a classic hero, but also on the other hand,
I think we it's so great to see like Sansa and Arya's arcs for that reason, because they are both two characters that are learning to play the game. And so that idea that, yeah, you got to be kind of shady to survive, but we see in them that you can still be kind of true to who you are and do it in different ways. So it's that idea of like, how do you survive in this world? Like, we see Sansa learning to take what she always was, you know, as a young person, like a lady, the idea of being a lady, and how that's being morphed into somebody who is surviving and playing the game. And then you have Arya running around and like murdering people and stuff. And so that developed in like that way as well. So I like that it is grappling with all of these different ideas of, okay, who survives in this world, and how do they get there, you know?
So when I was talking to my friends about this last night, one of the things that came up was the idea of the anti-villain.
My favorite.
So, Sam, what are your feelings on this?
Well, yeah, see, I feel like I've embraced anti-villains more than anti-heroes in recent years, just because I really love villains for being villains. Like, again, I don't like this mostly fandom tendency to be like, oh, but they're like, oh, they're so pure, and let's put them in some like fluffy fan fiction. I'm like, no, like, let them be horrible. And I think that any good villain at this point really is going to be more of this like anti-villain character, because the good villains are the ones that are complex and you can sort of almost understand, no matter how horrible they're being. You may not forgive them for their actions, but you understand where they're coming from. You know, that very classic, they're their hero in their own story, you know, kind of thing. They're doing whatever they're doing, no matter how horrible it is, for a specific reason, following a specific moral code or whatever. So I feel like those are some of the best villains, because the villains that are just straight up like horrible and you don't really have any reason for being horrible, you don't really know why they're feeling the way they are.
The stories where you're like, why are you doing this?
That's the evil. Worst. Yeah. As Mari calls it, the mustache twirling like villain. Like, that's it's horrible. And so I feel like any good villain at this point has to, for me, be like an anti-villain, because those moments of them maybe doing a good thing or doing a bad thing for a good reason or whatever are the moments that I look for and like pull for, and just make them much more compelling, in my opinion. So I love them.
I think it's interesting too, when we're talking about anti-villains specifically, and I mean anti-heroes too, but they're characters that maybe aren't either, but they change along the course of their story. And so maybe they start off pure villain and they get to a place where they're either more heroic or whatnot, and how you consider those characters and how fandom considers those characters. Because, you know, it's difficult to divorce that character from all of its history, but people want like the good stuff at the end. But I don't know, what do you guys, is it like, how do you consider a character like that that changes along the course of the story? Like, Spike is a good example. I know that we hate Spike, Nicole and I do, but I mean, towards the end, he's a much better character. Like, he gains a soul. He changes. So how do you talk about those characters?
I have such a hard time with this, because it's gonna, like, everything. It, like, it depends on the person, because, like, some people can't forgive those actions. Like, some people can't forgive season 6 Spike, or can't forgive season 1 Damon, or whoever it is that you're talking about. And I am such a lover of redemption arcs. Granted, I also judge them at a very high level, so it's not like every redemption arc I'm like, lovely, wonderful. Like, they need to make sense to me. But I love redemption arcs, so I am going to be more accepting of those kinds of stories than someone else who's just like, no, I can never forgive XYZ, whatever it is that person's, you know, morals are. And it's so hard to have these conversations, because if you have two people talking about it with kind of different moral codes or opinions on certain things, then you're going to get very heated. And that's kind of where some of these fandom conversations kind of dissolve into like name calling. And it's like, well, then you're like a rape apologist and you're a murder, you know, like all of these, then it starts getting like really personal for people with, I feel like, a lot of these like redemption arcs and conversations about these characters and character arcs with that change from being like, let's say, a horrible person to like it's pretty, like, way over in more of the hero side of things, you know, over five seasons or whatever the case may be. So I think that's how these conversations get so heated and so nasty, because it's so hard for people to talk about these, like, morally complex things and not feel borderline attacked by it. I'm not really sure where exactly I'm going with this, but I've just seen so many, like, fandom fights over these kinds of characters and redemption arcs and stuff like that.
I am less inherently a fan of redemption arcs, and it is for reasons that are kind of wrapped up in and one and the same with my suspicion with anti-hero stories, like the reasons that I sort of come to them with like suspicious baggage. I feel that way about redemption arcs as well. And it mostly comes down to, for me, how honest I feel the source material is being about the nature of the person's, you know, badness, I guess, like of their wrongdoing and how I feel like redemption arcs are one of those things that there can be a narrative wish to say, like, yeah, like, here we go, and now you've done redemption, and, like, this is, like, very fulfilling, and frequently I'm like, yeah, but you didn't really do redemption. Like, you got, like, I don't know, like, you lucked into some shit, some things happened, and then now, like, everyone around you just forgives you, and, like, that's bully for you, but also, like, I don't feel like you've really atoned for anything. You don't really feel sorry. And, like, that to me is a thing that I often grapple with. I think the Spike example is one that frustrates me again for narrative reasons that I think the road to Spike's redemption involved a lot of the storytelling sacrificing other characters, mm-hmm. in ways that frustrated me. Like, it was just a lot of not really considering anybody else but getting Spike on his redemption road, whatever. And, like, it's that kind of stuff where I'm just like, I want it to be earned. A redemption arc is cool, but I definitely judge it very, very harshly about whether or not I feel that the redemption is actually earned at the end of it. And so I think, back to Sam's kind of initial point, it is very, very case by case. It is, like, nearly impossible to talk about any of this stuff with, like, broad strokes, like, redemption arcs good, anti-heroes or anti-villains who become anti-heroes or whatever, like, good, bad, like, as with everything, it's a trope that can be effectively deployed or not, depending on how thoughtful the writers are being with what they're creating.
Yeah, I definitely feel like some of my favorite tropes, I feel like nearly all of them rely on some essence of, like, the slow burn, whether that's, like, I love, like, the enemies to lovers. I love the redemption arc. I love the anti-hero, anti-villain, but you have to take your time with it and you have to be really thoughtful about it. And a lot of people aren't, and a lot of show creators or storytellers or whatever aren't, and they're just like, people love this and we're gonna do this and it's gonna take, like, oh, we're gonna be redeemed over, like, three episodes. It's like, no, you need at least a season, if not two, you know, like, you can't do this over this short amount of time. I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. So I'm the same way, even though we come to it with very different opinions about it overall and I'm kind of are biased towards it or against it, I'm the same way where I'm like, if I see something coming, I'm like, are you gonna give it enough time? It needs a lot of time.
Yeah, it needs a lot of time.
That's how I feel about any of those tropes that I do love, but it's just like, I'm not going to automatically love it if you don't give it the time and the care that it needs to fully develop in a way that's believable.
We talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Chosen Ones too, that, you know, the Chosen One has to earn it. I think that I'm the same, like, the redemption arc has to be earned as well. So, but I just think it's funny because when I think of Spike, we can do, like, a quick poll here. Do you think of Spike as a villain or as an anti-hero?
I think, so first of all, I think that even at his introduction, he falls into this anti-villain category, yeah. Specifically. I think that even from the outset, because with the whole loves bitch, like that whole, I think he is introduced as an anti-villain. I think that the show perspective on Spike is that he is introduced as an anti-villain and he becomes an anti-hero by the story's end. By the start of season 7, and I think that the finale is meant to tell you that he is a hero through and through.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. And I think that the show considers him an anti-hero much earlier than he deserves, even. I love Spike. I love him. I love him so much. But even I agree that it's like, well, you're already starting to forgive him, like, a little sooner than maybe you should, you know? Like, he needs a little more time. in the oven to, you know, like really get to like the nice golden brown of an anti-hero. But like, it's just like, that's kind of, yeah. But I agree that as far as like the show, he starts out as villain to anti-villain, definitely more like Nicole was saying, the anti-villain with this like love of Drew and all this stuff and his little family and whatever, and then goes to, you know, anti-villain, and then here, you know, the ending, the burning flames and the, you know, how everything is even shot is very much like, yes, he's an angel. Yes. Look at him, you know, and you're like, he's not, but okay.
Yes. The 100 is another one of the shows that introduces a lot of these kinds of things and like just does not ever give any of it enough time. I fucking forget his name now. I should not have brought it up without remembering the kid's name. But there's one of the original 100 who comes down to Earth, like is like clearly a bad dude at the outset.
Oh.
And is now, he's like, he's still alive. I'm still watching this show. Why?
The one that looks like Cillian Murphy, sort of, that kid.
Yeah, that kid.
His name's Murphy. His name's Murphy. There we go.
Murphy, yes. Murphy, him. Yeah, he is definitely one of those where I'm like, I mean, and now, I don't know, I've been watching this so long that I'm like, you're right, show, I have completely forgotten. But I remember feeling like the show rushed into the, nah, he's good now, kind of thing in a way that I was like, is he though? So, yeah.
That makes me want to get back on board that show, definitely, because I kind of gave up at some point because I just got really tired and exhausted. And it's just, there's just a lot of emotions with those CW shows.
Yes.
And so I had to stop. But I liked, it's so funny, here we go. I liked Murphy as a character from the beginning because I knew they were going to do that with him. Like, mm-hmm. I sort of, you know, like you just
yes,
see.
Totally.
You just feel and you're like, so he's going to go off and be gone for a while and then he's going to come back and he's going to be better. You know, like I knew, you know, and I'm like, all right, I'll accept it. And I do this with like CW shows specifically because it's just kind of a thing that they do. Like I kind of know the beats of the CW shows at this point.
Yeah,
and I'm like, all right, I'm in. So now that I know that definitely happened, I'm like, maybe I should come back.
Yeah, it's like, for me, it's not a thing that is like a deal breakery thing. There's so many problems with that world and whatever that it's not, I get that was telegraphed from the outset, that's what they were doing with this character. And definitely, if that kind of thing is your jam, by all means, you should pick this back up. For me, it was like just barely a small enough part of the plot that I was like, whatever. I can overlook this for my angsty, soapy teenager drama, which... That is the part of it that is my jam. So
it's, I have to ask a question because I know you guys talked about it, but I specifically avoided this particular episode because Maddie told me to not watch it or not listen because she's like, we're going to fight after. But you guys talked the recent Star Wars and I am very curious.
Oh God.
I know I'm poking the bear, but I'm very curious because this is, you know, Star Wars has these like typical tropes and stuff. And we've seen the anti-hero in Star Wars so many different times now, but I'm curious what you guys are thinking about the kind of leanings of Kylo Ren now, who very firmly started as a villain to almost again like the sort of anti-villain by the end, who knows? And if you read the, you know, extended universe stuff, then you have more information and all this stuff that you get with Star Wars. It's so exhausting. But I'm curious on your guys' opinions about the anti-hero, anti-villainess specifically with the newer trilogy.
You mentioned like with the 100 where there was that one character, I've never watched it, but that you felt that the material was kind of preparing you for that mm-hmm. character was going to go on that journey, and your reaction was adorable to that, where you're like, yeah, okay. My reaction, like I said, my baggage, my reaction to that thing is immediately like, no, shut it down. Yes. I've been burned.
Kill it
before.
With fire.
Yeah. And that's not to say that I never enjoy it. It's just that I really go into it in a negative place. And that's the way that it is with Jaime Lannister at this point. Like, because I've heard so much from the fandom and I've heard so much from the Star Wars fandom that even if the show weren't telegraphing, you have this like background information. So I'm going in prepared to not like it. And that was like literally the first thing that I said when we were talking about what we knew about Star Wars. I was like, I don't know, but I already hate this Kylo Ren guy. or the idea that people were shipping him or you know, with our very pure and good heroine that we see. And I don't know. I don't have the full story yet either. And so that's part of you know, the problem in talking about this. I don't have the full story, but like from where I am right now, I'm very heavily biased against it. And if they are going the route of a redemption arc, they better nail it, because I cannot. Like, I'm already like, are you serious right now? Especially because everything we see him do in the first movie, I'm like, oh, it's already hurting me.
Yes. So I have also seen the second one. We're going to do an episode about it on the podcast in a bit. It's down the line. But I am going to say, I'm adding that to say that I do have the additional information of the second movie, but my feelings are essentially the same, which are that yes, like I'm not into it. I don't for me that is a storytelling trope that I have like a very high barrier with, and that like it needs to be done very fucking well, or else I'm gonna have 1,000 problems. And again, I think like there are all sorts of tropes, there are all sorts of kinds of things that I'm much more willing to be like, yeah, like I hear you, everyone saying that X, Y, and Z are flaws with the way that such and such thing was executed, whatever. This for me is not one of those things. Redemption arcs are definitely something that I'm like, no, I want. It's got to be like flawless and pure. On the subject of Jamie, like the only ending that will satisfy me is a Cersei murder suicide. Like that is it. Kill Cersei and then himself. Everything else will disappoint, I think. Like, and actually to that end, we were talking after we finished recording the Westworld episode, we were talking about Ford and, you know, the degree to which Ford orchestrating this big end that ultimately ends, includes his demise, the degree to which that is like an act of redemption, and I don't know. And like this was, we had differing opinions about this, which is why it was kind of unfortunate that we didn't have this conversation while we were still recording this episode. Like that for me is one of those things that I'm like, okay, I think on the whole, he did a lot of very bad things. I think that the like questionable morality of his life's work is evident, but also his like last act was an effort to right those wrongs. And so like that to me is okay. Sure. I don't know that it makes you like purely good, but I think it is a like worthwhile end, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely like those kind of bittersweet anti-hero, anti-villain endings. That's something that I really pull for. I know a lot of people don't, because people just don't like bittersweet endings like that. But I definitely, I just thrive off of angst of any variety. And I admit that about myself. And those kind of like sad endings for some of these anti-heroes, whether they've made a lot of progress or not, I just tend to kind of eat up, because I'm like, yeah, that's a good way for them to end. And that's a really earned redemption. And, you know, that's awesome. But I know a lot of people are like, no, they need to like run off and be happy and get married and have babies. And I'm like, no, they don't. No.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Yes. Like that I think angst. I also yes. love some angst. I feel like that's the meeting point of our perspectives on this for sure. It's like, yes, like some sort of tragic end that like they finally did the right fucking thing like at mm-hmm. the end, and then like they died, and what's like, okay, like all right, you know, I'm not gonna run around and be like the biggest fan of that character, but also I can let my issues with that character die with them, I guess. Like, okay, cool.
I think part of my issue, so when the anti-hero trope is not working for me, it's usually when we've touched on this, but it's when the material is using it as an excuse to cover up the anti-hero's jerky behavior. Like if you're a douche but it's like, I don't know, the text is almost excusing it. That's when I really start to have issues with it. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, just as a personal thing about me, I can hold a grudge. Like, whoa. So when it's something like, when I think about where, you know, these New York Star Wars movies are going, and the idea that he could, Kylo Ren could redeem himself. Like, I'm still stuck in the first movie, like who he kills, all the collateral damage, the pain that he costs the characters I actually like. Like, I'm stuck there. I'm holding that grudge. That's why it takes a lot for me to feel like an anti-hero or a villain has earned my forgiveness, because I don't want to excuse his behavior. And I also, like, you know, all that other stuff he did sucked, and I'm not going to forget about it.
Yeah, I also feel like one of the things that happens, and we kind of briefly touched on this at the beginning, as far as the prevalence of anti-heroes and anti-villains being mostly male, is that you have them doing a lot of, or more likely to, at least not the ones that I like, because I'm elevated and everything else, but because you have a tendency for them to...
intellectual.
Right? You have a tendency for these, like, anti-hero characters to be, like, rapists and a lot of sexual harassment and abusing women and just the stuff that's like we were saying earlier, like, we just are so sick of seeing, like, in real life, that it's just like, I don't want to, like, forgive these characters for doing this. Like, don't make me, you know? And so that's why for the anti-heroes and stuff, if there's a female anti-hero, I'm almost always completely on board from the beginning. I'm not always on board with every single anti-hero I see, but if it's an anti-heroine, I'm almost exclusively going to be like, yes, because it's just like, I feel like it gets kind of sloppy with the anti-hero writing, where it's like, oh, they have to do some bad stuff. Like, make them a misogynist. Like,
yes.
That's
right,
easy.
Right.
Make them beat their wife, you know? Like, yes. Let's do that. And it's just like, oh my gosh. Like, can you think of nothing else more creative?
It's the shorthand. So that's employing the trope, but you're not doing anything necessarily new with it. And in fact, you're taking the laziest way to tell us that your you know, hero is anti, because he beat his wife, but he feels so bad about it later. Like, oh, come on. Like, right. That's like the cheapest way that you can communicate that to your audience is violence against women. So I'm like immediately topped out, not only because it's like misogyny or violence against women, but because it's cheap. We've seen it before. Move on.
It's also often done in a way that is only about your shitty dude, and mm-hmm. like, we never get the perspective of the wife who's getting beaten. Or if we do, like, the degree to which we get her perspective, it's not even really her perspective. Like, it is her showing up in some way to, like, either redeem by forgiving or excuse by, like, herself being shitty in some way. Like, oh, she deserved it kind of garbage. And mm-hmm. so, like, that kind of thing is also, I think, going back to Jessica Jones, like, I think one of the things that I love so much about that show, particularly the first season, is that every, like, supporting character is whole and has clear, like, objectives and wants things. And in a way that, like when I compare Jessica Jones season one to Daredevil season one, like, I think both shows are fantastic, but I think Daredevil season one of the ways that it falters is that many of its supporting characters are like moving pieces around the board. Like, I, at some point started, like, actively rooting for Foggy to get fridged. Like, that was, I was like, let's invert. Like, it's great because, like, we're flipping fridging because it's going to happen to a dude. Like, I think it'll motivate Matt a ton. And, like, what the fuck is Foggy doing anyway? That's like a side, not relevant to this anti-heroes conversation, but to this sort of larger point, like, how much are the other characters in this world being considered? And, like, that is the thing. I think this is also part of why anti-hero stuff is often, like, has that barrier to entry for me, right? Is that, like, there's this idea that I should forgive or excuse or whatever, in some way, like, not think as badly about this character's bad behavior. But frequently those stories do that in a way that doesn't really ever consider fully the perspectives of the people who are being wronged by that character in some way. And, like, that for me is a thing that is like, nope, I'm not, I'm not interested in that. That, like, I should just forgive you because, like, X, Y, or Z tragic thing that is unrelated to the bad thing that you have done. But, like, you had these other tragedies, and so somehow that makes it all better or okay. Like, no, it does not. So I think actually also our next episode is Avatar The Last Airbender. That's next, right? Yeah, that's yes. Next week. Okay. Yes. Oh, man. I am almost done with the second season, and it appears to me that Prince Zuko is having a big redemption arc.
Yes.
I guess I'm not done yet, but this appears to be what is happening. And They set the stage for this with a lot of his tragic backstory, but like this second season, the Earth season, it's like a lot of him going around and like hearing from all of these villagers. He's like in hiding and whatnot, and hearing from all of these villagers who lost loved ones, whose homes were destroyed, who whatever, as a result of this Fire Nation war. And like that aspect of it, I don't know how they're going to resolve it. So I can't quite speak to this yet. I'm sure we'll have this conversation again next week, but that aspect of like what is sort of wrong in your background, like it's being confronted. It's being confronted rather directly that like here are the people who were hurt, and like he is confronting the people who were hurt. And I think that is like that is the kind of thing that is an example of an anti-hero or redemption or whatever type story done well.
So there are some of my favorite anti-heroes that we haven't mentioned yet. We've mentioned a ton of stuff, but one of my favorite, always at the top of the list for me, is Captain Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly, who is one of these ones that falls into the category of, you know, morally gray, you know, they're a bunch of thieves basically in space. But he has a super strong moral code also. And they're a found family, and he's very loyal to that family. So even though, especially going back and recapping, there were a lot of times where I was like, ooh, Mal, why? Like, why are you doing these things? It was very painful to look at it with a more critical eye, because you really realize, especially in his treatment of, I forget her name.
Inara.
In his treatment of Inara, like, that was the number one thing where I was like, this is terrible. But he, as a character as a whole, because he has that strong sense of loyalty, and, you know, you have everything from where he doesn't sell River out and he like hides them and protects them and takes them in, and you're immediately like, yes, to that moment where he kicks somebody into the engine turbine, because like, you know, he just kicks them and you just see the person fly out and you were like, okay, insta murder, great. Like, I was not expecting that. So, and he also has that really great scene that he's just like won a duel and the guy is on the floor and he says something along the lines of like, mercy is the mark of a great man, and he pokes the guy and he's like, well, I'm a good man, and he pokes him again, he's like, well, I'm not that bad. Like, so like he has a sense of like he's not a great man, but you know, he's not that bad. So he's one of my faves for sure.
Definitely going off of the earlier mentioned thieves plotline that I was talking about, I feel like all of my favorites are definitely thief type characters. So Locke from The Lies of Locke Lamora, for example, or Kelsier from Mistborn, or Kaz Brekker from Six of Crows. Like, these are all these unapologetic thieves that also sometimes kill people from time to time. And I love them. I think the redeeming thing about these three characters specifically, and just thieves in general, I think, is that they have to be very smart. And that just gets me like every time whenever they're doing something like really, really calculated and smart. I'm like, oh, go you. And it just, and they all have their little band, you know, their little band of friends or little found families or whatever. And typically speaking, in all of these books specifically, you have them going after people, like we mentioned before, that are generally not good people, wealthy and taking advantage of other people, stuff like that. So while they're stealing their money and their entire livelihood and ruining their lives, you're kind of like, well, they kind of deserve that, you know, like, I'll allow it. So I definitely love them. And as far as anti-heroines, I think my favorite one is Asune from the Broken Earth trilogy by N.K. Jemisin.
Yes.
She is, again, a kind of a product of the world again, where it's like, okay, if you stuck her in a contemporary world, she'd be a total asshole and everyone would hate her. And she kind of has those moments too in the series where people are like, Asune, you're really selfish. And she has to kind of confront that as like, yeah, she lives in this world where she has to survive and she has to only think about herself and her children, and that's it. But she's done a lot of really shitty things, and there's been a lot of collateral damage because of that. So part of her character arc over the whole series is kind of coming to terms with that and realizing that and deciding if that's something she wants to change or if that's something that she has to live with due to the circumstances of her world.
So most of my favorites are things that we've already talked about, but a couple that we have not yet. So like The Americans, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend are probably like top of my list of, I think, like explicitly anti-heroes that are done in ways that I think are, it's well handled. A couple that we haven't mentioned though, we've talked a bit about Buffy, but Faith.
Yes.
I think that her arc is very, very, very well done. I think specifically her arc as it's handled on Angel, which is just, I think, like such a clever use of Angel, the show as well. I think Angel, just in general, the way in which that show grapples with complicated morality on the whole, I think Faith is the best specific example of it, but there are a bunch of examples across that show, and I think that are really, really interesting. And I think the way that they use Angel's larger like quest for redemption and whatnot, they use that in a way that plays off of all of the other characters very, very well, and also makes a lot of his supporting characters very like complex and whole in very cool and interesting ways. Another favorite, I think this is a little bit trickier, but I think Veronica Mars counts as an anti-hero to a degree, in that she is often behaving badly. she does some questionable shit, but like lots of breaking and entering, but you know, she's like a forever favorite, so I don't know, I recognize that it's bad behavior.
I've got another two stories that I think that if you're a fan of reading about anti-heroes and anti-villains are really great. One is Vicious by V.E. Schwab, which tells the story of two college roommates that they find a way to give themselves superpowers. And as you start reading, you think that one is the hero and one is the villain, and that kind of gets switched on you, and one is very clearly a villain and one is an anti-villain. Like, he's still not the hero. He's very clearly a villain, but you end up caring so much for this anti-villain by the end, especially because the author gathers a found family around him, and so you start really loving them as a unit. And even though you're like, yeah, I know you're like the villain of the story, but the hero is even more villain than you are, like, I don't know. There are layers here. So it's a really great story if you enjoy the anti-hero thing. And then one of my favorites, which I didn't immediately think about it, but when I did, I was like, oh, I think this fits perfectly, is the Fairyland series by Catherine M. Valenti. The young girl who is at the head of this very flowery, it is a fairy tale, it's not necessarily for everyone, it's very densely written and very rich in its setting, but it takes this young girl and gives her all of these anti-hero or heroine attributes and puts her on a very traditional fairy tale like quest to, you know, unearth or I'm sorry, to unseat the power in this world. And she gets, you know, all the little missions in between, but you know, she's kind of a liar. They call her selfish a bunch of times, irascible, you know, she's a thief. So she gets all of these like traditionally negative qualities, but puts her on a very traditional path. And I love it to pieces. So if you're into that kind of thing, I would check that one out as well.
You got me thinking to both of you guys when you're talking about your favorites, another thing that I have to bring up whenever I talk about media in general, and that's the Mass Effect video game series. And because I'm a trash can. But the thing that's really cool about that is you have this whole morality piece within that, in that you can, when you're playing the character, everyone plays Commander Shepard, whether you're a male or a female, and you can choose to either make them a paragon, which is basically your classic hero, or a renegade, which is more of your almost anti-villain. I mean, you can do some really messed up stuff as the game progresses. And it's fun because you get points depending on your responses and your actions and stuff. And you can even take extra actions if you have enough points in certain category. And I always say that I play as a paragade, where I'm kind of right in the middle. I've always wanted to try to do a renegade playthrough where you are completely awful. And I've never been able to, because it breaks my heart so much, because you can actually be so mean to some of your side characters. But they basically do, because of that whole kind of like dynamic, they basically surround you with a crew of kind of anti-hero-y type characters. They're all on a spectrum. But you have one of my favorite assassins in there. His name's Thane, and he comes from a race of aliens that are basically raised by another race of aliens to be assassins for them. So he's an assassin character, but he has this very strict moral code, and he's probably the most religious character in the whole series that you run into. And he has all this like prayer and just all the stuff that he does that you're like, he's such a, like, he's probably one of the best people on this ship, but he's the assassin on this ship. So just that whole kind of concept of like this morality scale that they do within the game makes it so you have those kind kinds of conversations all the time with both side characters and your main character, which is a fun.
This conversation has also been fun, but now it is time for us to end. Thank you to Sam for joining us again this week. Thank you to all of you for listening. If you would like to continue this conversation with us, we would love that. You can find us at snarksquad.com, where there will be a post for this. You can also join our newsletter and our Discord. You can send us an email at team@snarksquad.com or find us on Twitter at @snark_squad. I am @SweeneySays.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
And you can find me at Thoughts on Tomes.
Thank you to Stefan Shin for the fancy theme music that is playing us out right now. And we will be back in your ears again next week. Bye.
Bye.